All right. 239-1310. 239-1310 is after news names. We're gonna flip the script. We're going to clear the lines. Because the lady everybody in Indiana has been talking about since November the 6th is here. More votes than virtually anyone on the ballot in Indiana is what Glenda Ritz got. We talking millions of votes, not thousands of votes, millions of votes. Won 50 to 51 of the 92 counties in Indiana, not just the big ones like Marion and Lake. She won them little small Mayberry counties because folk down in Mayberry in the rural Republican counties liked what they heard. And you know you have to be effective when the other side says things like, she cheated, they did wrong things, she scared people. Nice little lady don't scare, librarians don't scare people to death, special ed teachers don't scare people to death, teachers at Crooked Creek don't scare people to death. She is here. She is the superintendent of public instruction elect of the great state of Indiana. She's excited. She's energized. And even a caller just called and said they were actually, Matt Tully at the Star was nice to you last night. She's Glenda Ritz and she's here live. First of all, congratulations.
Thank you, Amos.
What election night? I've told the listeners, I was sitting at Channel 6 about 7:15, and they wanted me to talk to the anchors about the election. And I'm looking out of the corner of my eye, the little thing that goes across the bottom of the screen, and I'm looking, and you're ahead. And I knew the Marion County vote hadn't even come in yet. And I told them, I said, sometimes there's a surprise in a statewide race. Something happens that people's not expected. Keep your eyes on this race. When did you know election night that you had made one of the biggest upsets in Indiana politics in some time?
Well, let me go back further than the election night. I actually knew a month out. I was very confident that we were going to win the race. We had calculated numbers that we might need to actually win. Based upon the 2008 election. Mm-hmm. So we were very comfortable. There was a huge base out there, and I was going to be shocked if I lost.
Ah.
And I don't say that to be bragging. We just simply ran a very organized and orchestrated grassroots campaign with everybody spreading the word further and further and further, mm-hmm. With radio and media in terms of the social networks. And then we were on the TV late. We wanted to be under the radar. Because our opponent, Dr. Bennett, did have millions of dollars, and we didn't have that kind of money. But we wanted to run a really good grassroots campaign. But election night, when it turned my name over at 4%, I told the group at our office area, we had a little party, and I said, it's just going to keep going up and up and up. Mm-hmm. I said, it's going to be exciting, this win is. So I felt good the whole night because I'd been out in the state, could see the energy.
Are you concerned going into office that some of the folks that are there now are just going to leave and you're going to have to be scrambling just to fill the basic positions in the Department of Education to do the regular day-to-day work that office does?
Oh, not at all. In fact, we have a process in place during the transition. We are looking at some key positions, you know, higher up in the scheme of the personnel structure, that we obviously want to have some certain people in place. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, no, the Department of Education is going to run as it has been to take care of business. But we are going to be moving forward on a different agenda.
If you had the opportunity to sit down with the governor-elect.
I have. I have met with him about a half hour, just shortly after the election, actually.
Mm-hmm.
We had a great conversation about my educational background and my me growing up and my philosophies.
Mm-hmm.
And then we talked about career and tech education,
mm-hmm.
as a focus that we both wanted to work jointly on right from the start.
Right.
Actually have been in some meetings where some of his staff have been present, and we're moving forward on that agenda, actually.
Hmm.
And just very delightful conversation.
In terms of your priorities, well, first of all, when are you going to be sworn in? When do you take office?
Well, actually, I've already been sworn in. I did that right after the elections were certified on a Tuesday, and I did chose to do it in front of the Crooked Creek students. I showed them a PowerPoint about how the campaign went and where my office was going to be at the State House. And at the end, I said, you know, you have to get sworn in before you can take office. So we did that right there in front of them, and oh, they were so impressed. The kids thought that was awesome. So my public swearing in, I'm actually going to do it on January 19th, this Saturday following the 14th, when I officially take office.
During Dr. King weekend.
It is. Okay. It is. I'm going to have a celebration at the State House so that educators and people from around the state can have an opportunity to come. And we're going to have an open house over there and have a great time.
What are your priorities? I mean, once you hit the ground running on the 14th of January, what are the short-term priorities? What are the long-term priorities?
Well, we've been working on legislative language already because that's in the process of being, you know, completed here even now before I take office. I'll be working on the budget. But the priorities are, you know, really what I said in the campaign. I want to see a different focus on the reading programs. I want to not have the iRead pass-fail test. I want to put in some strong reading assessments that are real growth models so that we know the reading levels of our students. So that's a number one priority. A to F, we're actually working in the legislature to have that policy rescinded so that we can create a system that's simplistic and actually talks about individual students and their improvement, making a very simple process for people to understand. I don't think we need to be labeling schools. We got out of, somehow there was a wrong detour. We went away from showing improvement of schools to labeling schools. And we need to get to the point where we're talking about the improvement of schools, making sure that we have the high standards.
Was the school labeling and the delay in publicly announcing the grades, but people in schools knew them, school board members knew them, and we did interviews on this program with incumbent school board members, as well as particularly incumbent school board members in Washington Township and Warren and Wayne and Lawrence and IPS. They all knew what their scores were. They couldn't publicly say it on the radio because there was agreement you couldn't say it until the superintendent said it. But listening to them talk and characterize, they were not pleased with how they were working. And I'm sure if those conversations were occurring here in Marion County, they were occurring in the other 290 school corporations across the state. Was that one of the sleeper issues that helped push you over?
Well, I actually, it was an issue of my entire campaign, and I've been talking about it the entire campaign. And there were issues with the superintendents and the school boards, you know, even before. But the fact that it was coming to an actual decision-making process, I think that All of the policy pieces helped in making sure that I was elected, because this is one of the elections that actually was about policy. Mm-hmm. It was a referendum on education and excuse me, and where we should be headed with education. And labeling schools and school districts is not the way to do that.
One of the things when we looked at poor little Flanner House that just got victimized in the iRead 3 and then their original grade was supposed to be an F, and they appealed and managed to get it changed to a D, and they leaked. I guess I can say this now. It's a new superintendent in there, so they won't get in trouble. They actually sent to me the grading, the scoring form from the Department of Education. And in looking at that, it looked like their kids did well enough in terms of their regular growth to like earn a couple of points toward their goal. But then they had some other growth where the growth was positive, but it wasn't the growth somebody felt they needed, and they lost a point. And I'm explaining this in my house to folks, and they couldn't understand, how do you lose points if kids grow? They understand, you know, in a grading system, you lose points if your score goes down. They get that. I mean, that's common Hoosier horse sense. But they didn't understand that. Is that part of the whole problem with evaluating a school? It needs to be consistent. If you're growing, give them credit. If you're going backwards, then you don't deduct credit if you're growing.
Well, you are exactly right, and that's what I call the artificial growth model. Mm-hmm. We don't have a growth measure test, so we don't really know the actual improvement of every student from year to year because they take a pass-fail test, and it's a different test every single school year. So yes, it's an artificial growth model that was in actuality comparing student scores with their peers around the state of Indiana. And they were just estimating, you know, those scores. And so we really couldn't, you know, we couldn't justify what those scores were. And that's exactly what was happening. Schools didn't grow enough, according to this, the Department of Education.
239-1310. 239-1310's afternoon's name is, you got a question for the new superintendent of public instruction. She's Glenda Rich. She's here live. We're going to get her some water. And we'll show we'll show you where the water is during the break. And when she come back, you got a question for her. This is your opportunity to find out where she stands on these education. Don't believe what the paper says. Don't believe what the Republicans say. Hear it from the superintendent's mouth. She's here. She's sworn in. So she's ready to rock and roll. It's afternoons with Amos after these. With Glenda Ritz, the superintendent of public instruction. Early childhood education is going to be a major subject in this legislative session, or really once we get to the first of the year. Both candidates, all three candidates for governor, talked about it. So obviously Governor-elect Pence is going to talk about it. Was at a conference this morning where the Speaker of the House, Brian Bosma, says that is one of his major legislative agendas. And usually when a speaker says that's an agenda, that's a bill that has a very low number and that's serious business. Where are you on early childhood education?
Well, first of all, I'm excited that it's going to be a topic of conversation finally in the state of Indiana. But I'm proposing that we actually lower the attendance age from 7 to 5. So that we can so we can get kindergarten going. Mm-hmm. We don't even have kindergarten really fully established in the state of Indiana because the mandatory age for attendance is 7. Mm. So we are proposing age 7 to 5. We are very close to having full funding for full-day kindergarten, mm-hmm. and so we need to get that in place. It's just a matter of where do we want to make those dollars happen within the general funding formula, or do we want to have them still in some of the block grant? Right. So we want to get kindergarten fully established, make mm-hmm. sure everybody's got space in their schools to offer that full-day kindergarten program. And then I actually, you know, and this is going to seem like a strange position, but we have a lot of pilot programs already going on in the state of Indiana in school districts regarding preschool. Mm-hmm. And so we've got to establish some standards. We got to make some plans. We have some partnerships going with some centers for preschool in many areas throughout the state. And we really need to have a true plan on where we're headed with preschool. I'm just going to say I think we should hold off on the preschool piece until we get the kindergarten fully established mm-hmm. and get kids in at age 5. And then we need to develop over the next year or so what needs to be in place to talk about funding for preschool.
So preschool, we should have the same kind of systematic stuff we've done with higher education. What are we trying to do? What standards need to be in place? You know, talk to folks, not only teachers, but the business community, parents, maybe even talk to the kids, you know, because sometimes they may have some good ideas. You don't know, as well as lawmakers, community leaders, and then come up with a plan. 239-1310, 239-1310 is afternoon's names. Let me start and get you guys engaged. Let me start with Anonymous. Hi there.
Yes.
You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, Amos. Congratulations to Glenda. And as a retired teacher, I have two questions that I think need to be considered. Number one, is there a pathway for schools that have been taken over by for-profit organizations for these schools to be returned to their original school district? That's question number one.
Well, let me go ahead and respond to that one, if I might. The takeover schools have contracts with the Department of Education, and so I'll be reviewing those contracts, and many of them are for more than 1 year, obviously, and so I have to take a look at those contracts and then see how that's going to be. I'm actually going to be making sure we have some pretty rigorous accountability for the schools, and so that's part of my responsibility. But I, as the superintendent of public instruction, I'm not going to be taking over schools. So the takeovers that we currently have now, I need to really take a look at. I need to make sure I need to review the contracts. We need to see what needs to be in place to move those schools forward and take a look at it.
What's your second question, Anonymous?
What's on tap for vocational education and family living, which used to be home ec? This is a period of time when we really and truly need both of those areas of instruction. And I haven't heard anything about the reinstatement of the home ec, which was known as family living. And I've heard a little bit about vocational education.
And I think it's fair, Glenda Ritz, that vocational education is moving on a fast track. You want some things done. Mike Pence, the governor-elect, has been very outspoken on vocational. So we'll get some move on vocational. Where would home ec, or maybe there's a new fancy 21st century title for that. Is that appropriate when the emphasis on education is giving you an education to get you a gig, get you a job?
Yeah, actually, I'm going to expand the notion of career tech education. I think career tech education, no matter what courses are offered, should be open up to all students. Students are needing to leave high school with some type of good paying opportunity for a job, either to go into that profession or to earn money to go into higher education. Mm-hmm. They need to have skills and an area in which they feel comfortable actually leaving high school. I'm even talking about courses like cadet teaching that can be offered. So we know in high school that we've got some good candidates to become teachers even in our schools. So I want to expand the notion of career tech opportunities. We're going to be working with the communities. We're going to put in place actually outreach coordinators in regional areas. We're going to be working with the education service centers that are already established. There are 9 regions in the state, and my regional coordinators will be responsible for helping to develop and get those community contacts, whether it be talking with the mayors or the business people or city councils. Who do we need to talk with to make sure that we're making improvement in the career and tech education department?
Does your office need to start, and pointing fingers is the wrong word, really telling the proprietary schools, the for-profit post-secondary schools, the ITTs, the Robert Morris College, all these little places, that they got to get with the program to provide quality education that leads to a job, not just having people take courses and run up mountains of debt, and then they have a certificate or a degree that is worthless?
Oh, we're going to be having lots of conversation. We also need to have conversation about dual credits that you know, are offered at the high school so that you can do higher education, even at Ivy Tech. Mm-hmm. We got to have a lot of conversation with the higher education community, no matter what they're serving, even the 2-year or the 4-year programs, to make sure that we're all going to be on the same wavelength. I had a great meeting the other day regarding CTE. Lilly has provided a grant to the Department of Education, working right. with the University of Indianapolis, to coordinate some efforts to try to get those things started in the state of Indiana. But you are correct, as a listener, that we really have not promoted career and tech opportunities the last several years, and we are so far behind now. So we really have a lot of catch up to do.
Let me go to Brenda, and we want to ask everybody, keep your questions short to the point so we can get as many people as possible talking to Glenda Ritz. Hi, Brenda.
Hi, Amos. It's not always easy. There's so many terrible things going on in our educational system. Hi, Superintendent Ritz. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine. Thanks, Brenda.
I had a couple of questions, and I hope you answer them after I ask the questions in order. Are you going to clean out the Department of Education? Dana Long is an attorney that's been sitting with the Department of Education for many years. She needs to go.
Well, actually,
she has violated the rights of many disabled children in the state, and she needs to go. This is the other issue, real quickly. Mm-hmm. There was a call for testimony to end the prison-to-school pipeline in Washington, D.C. yesterday. U.S. Senator Dick Durbin, who heads the Judiciary Committee in Civil Rights and Human Rights, is looking at the systemic issues of the school-to-prison pipeline, where the rights of the children are being denied through the exclusionary process with our school system. Here's the other matter at hand. Are you familiar with the abuse of special needs children in our public schools, which is a GAO report dated May 29, 2009, Where do you stand on this issue about this shocking report as to children have died at the hands of school officials, children have been abused in our educational system, their rights are being taken from them? And finally, I'm very concerned about a parent whose child in Pike Township was put in the closet. Are you familiar with that story, Ms. Ritz?
I am not.
Okay, out in Pike Township on November the 22nd, it was reported in the Indianapolis Star, a little boy was violently attacked, and well, not attacked, but he was locked in a closet out in Pike Township. You know, these perpetrators who are abusing black boys with disabilities, I hope, Ms. Ritz, I voted for you. 16 years of Superintendent Sullen Reed, he did nothing. Tony Bennett did nothing. Our state elected officials have not done nothing on the issues dealing with the abuses that children with disabilities are facing in this state. So my question to you, dear, today is, what are you going to do about it? And will you, at some point in time, investigate these cases, put these people who are doing these things to our children, they need to be arrested. That principal out at Pike should be in jail.
Let me let the superintendent respond.
First of all, I'm not familiar with all the specific pieces that you talked about, but I can tell you I'm a special educator, and so I am going to be looking into quite a few different issues to be sure that we are adhering to the rights of children. That is extremely important to me. I'm licensed in special education as well as general education, and the rights of children have to be upheld. As for the actual legal aspects that you were speaking to. We are having a process by which we are working with the personnel to have on board with me in transition, and that includes, it will include a different legal team, and I'll be very selective when I do that because the issues that you've brought up actually need to be addressed in a legal fashion. So I'll be looking into things, but you just need to know that I'm a special educator, and I am always looking out for the rights of children.
All right, appreciate it. 2-3. Will there be racial diversity in the upper levels of your Department of Education?
There will be. There will be, and we have an open application process. In fact, we have people can go to
he's going to write that down.
IDOEjobs.org.
All right.
IDOEjobs.com.
IDOEjobs.com. Can get a gig in the Department of Education. Let me go back to the phones and Robert. Hi, Robert.
How you doing, Amos?
Fine.
And congratulations, Superintendent Glenda.
Okay. Thank you, Robert.
I'd like to ask you this question. There are so many black boys and girls in the system that is being suspended. What is your position on that? Will you investigate or will you have a team to investigate it and see what is causing it? Is it just outright blanket racism or some factors other than what the average system wouldn't know about?
Well, actually, we're going to be really working with that type of issue statewide. When my regional coordinators get in place, we're also going to be doing what I call an evaluation of school culture. So it's going to be many facets to that school culture evaluation. Some of the school districts do it as a part of their annual school improvement plan, but we're actually going to put in place a more rigorous system. And looking at that aspect of discipline is going to be part of what we're going to be doing. There's going to be some things that I call non-negotiables that should be part of a school culture. Everything from strong reading programs and curriculum, career tech opportunities, to disciplinary procedures, safety in the school, all kinds of school culture issues that should be in place to have a great school. So we're going to be actually collecting data and looking at that, and we're going to be providing from the ground floor, a bottom-up approach, support to the school systems to make sure that we're addressing those issues. And I can assure you that your issue that you're speaking about is of concern to me. So, but we'll be collecting that data statewide.
All right, appreciate it. And as data is collected, you know, currently the Department of Education has done a good job putting that data out publicly. They don't have enough people to do it, but putting that data out. Will this now include data like Robert is talking about and maybe data on disaggregated data on special education? In other words, by district, how many are in special education, how many are African American, Hispanic, you know, all down the line, male, female, so we can see once and for all where there are disparities, if there are any.
Well, I will let you know that data is readily available now.
Mm-hmm.
And there are areas in which there is the percentage of students that are identified as special education is beyond where it should be. Right. So I know that there are areas where that needs to be a focus. But yeah, that data, as far as I'm concerned, is already available. You may not be able to find it, but I know it's available.
All right, let me go back to the phones. And Raymond, hi there.
Hey, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hi, Raymond.
I have a question. Hi. I'm hoping I don't am not repeating what someone else said, but when I was in school years ago, we had a curriculum that was pretty much uniform, and we had, I guess, K through 8 and 9 through 12, and now there's like preschool, grade school, middle school, high school, post-secondary, and so forth and so on. And it just seems like the disparity between schools within one system is so, like, out of whack or out of balance. I'm sorry, whack was the wrong word. And I'm concerned that the curriculum, is it the curriculum, is it the teachers? Because this has been going on probably for 15 years where someone new or such as yourself may come in and try to do things, but still, because the kids are going home to external factors, such as the new type of music, the things going on at home, they may be in poverty, they may not be, they may not have a parent. But in school, we all had a certain way of thinking about getting educated, and the school controlled that with us. But it seems like there's such a disparity between one school to another within one system, and is there a uniform curriculum, a uniform disciplinary policy for both the teachers and students? I'm confused as to why so many years later that we've gotten these reports on issues in schools that it continues so in such a dramatic way.
And this is why this is the smartest talk show audience in the whole country. That's a great question.
That is a great question. I'm going to actually address the issue of reading. I think we have a large issue with kids reading in the state of Indiana. When kids cannot pass a pass-fail test, typically they can't read the on-grade level curriculum. And we have to address that head on. I just said a little bit ago, there's going to be some non-negotiables when it comes to school cultures, things that must be in place. We do have a standardized curriculum in the state of Indiana. However, I talked to a gentleman just the other day who was talking about textbooks and talking about the textbooks and the use of the textbooks as if it were the curriculum. So I had to make very clear that the curriculum and the standards are from the state of Indiana, and that's what the educators are supposed to be adhering to. It is not the textbooks. The textbooks are simply resources, and textbooks are not to be viewed as the curriculum that we are proposing. So, I mean, that they're supposed to be teaching. So, yes, there should be some uniform standards about what is being taught from school to school. You should be able to go from school to school to school and see the same curriculum in place. It may be taught in different ways. Kids may be learning in different ways, and that's to be expected because we have different principals that lead each school. Speaking of that, strong leadership is definitely needed, and I'm very excited about the legislature actually proposing that we get the Principal Leadership Academy back in place. It's been gone for 4 years, and so they're wanting to put that back in place with some funding, and that excites me.
239-1310, 239-1310's afternoon. His name is Glenda Ritz. We've got a letter, email at praiseindy.com. Would like your guest to speak on her outlook for the voucher program. What will happen with the program and the children who partake in it? Is there another plan to allow for those children who would not have otherwise not been able to afford to attend private schools but would like to remain? I know you've got strong feelings about that, but what about the kids and the families that are already taking part of that?
Well, first of all, myself and my department do not control the voucher system. Mm-hmm. That is controlled through the legislature. The Indiana Supreme Court will be deciding within the next 6 months probably as to whether it's constitutional or not in the state of Indiana to have the voucher place that we have in place. With that being said, the voucher program is going to have some strong accountability, making sure that the people who are taking advantage of the vouchers actually qualify for the vouchers. That'll be the first thing that I'll make sure that is happening. But the voucher program in itself is really controlled by the legislature. And so it will take legislative action to be able to put some more parameters in place, more guidelines in place, or whatever to tweak that language.
I got a text message at 85620, keyword Amos. They had a question. When will Indiana make a second language mandatory? I think it should begin in preschool.
Well, you know, I'm from Washington Township Schools, and we have the International Baccalaureate Program. We were just authorized all the elementary schools, and a second language is required. So I can tell you in my district, we do have second languages in all of our elementary schools. And then, of course, we obviously have them in the middle school and the high school. So we have a place all ready for that to happen. Speaking second languages is really important, but it also has to come with some funding. You have to find a way to be sure to implement programs like that. And we have several items in education that need attention and need funding, and including kindergarten that we just talked about. So yeah, having second languages and being exposed to foreign language, world language, is important to me. But it's not on the radar right now to address, you know, urgently. But I do know many school districts are beginning to address it.
Let me go back to takeovers. Right now, using the state board's guidelines and the state law guidelines, John Marshall is on the bubble. The way I look at the weird A through F grading system, at least a couple of charter schools around here are on the bubble. Imagine school is the worst example. And then these virtual schools aren't exactly setting the world on fire. So if we've got these kind of schools that are non-performing, but you don't want to take them over, what do we do with the school that for years is non-performing? Where's the hammer?
Well, actually, I'm going to talk about from a proactive standpoint. Mm-hmm. We've been operating on a reactive standpoint in the state of Indiana, and I really feel that once my coordinators get in place and we start to get at the issues, that we'll see some good improvements in our schools, and they'll be adhering to what's supposed to need to happen with their school culture. So because it really is about the school culture, not just the scores that we have been judging schools on. Right. I want to get about the bigger problems and working with the communities, whoever we need to work with, to make sure that we're going to address the issues. Now, whether that be a charter school or a public school, my coordinators on the ground are going to be responsible for the schools in their region and making sure that we're going to put in proper supports. So it's going to be a whole different – it's hard to explain, but it's a whole different mindset on how we provide support.
239-1310. 239-1310 is Afternoon's Davis. We'll take a break. We'll be back with more. And breaking news – Governor-elect Pence is announcing more people, more appointments. He's keeping the head of the National Guard. He made some other appointments, but this isn't the big story. The big story today is he finally found someone of color to appoint to something. Yay! And Governor-elect Pence has named Virgil Madden, who has been the longtime assistant for Lieutenant Governor Becky Skillman. He will be the new head of Indiana's professional licensing agency. That's the people that licenses everybody in town. And Virgil Madden becomes Governor-elect Pence's first minority appointment, first African-American appointment. So at least there's a little bit of color in the Pence administration. Plus, Virgil Madden's good people. That's even better. Anyway, it's Afternoons with Davis. We got Glenda Ritz. More with her after these. All right. Welcome back. Glenda Ritz is here. Back to the phones. And Miss B, hi there.
Hello.
How are you?
Oh, fine. And to your guest, how's she? I wanted to ask a question with her. Hello?
Yeah, hi. She's right here.
Okay. I wanted to ask the question. When Mr. Bennett passed the law that the teachers had to have some type of a degree, I don't agree with anything he said, but I agree with that. And I think I want to know if you agree with it, because years ago, black teachers had to have a degree to get a job being a teacher. And now they're hiring teachers that's got 60 hours in school at IPS.
Well, first of all, REPA 2, which was just passed, has a provision in it that was the subject of controversy, in that a person who had a bachelor's degree and a 3.0 in any subject matter, not even an education degree, would be able to just take a content test and then get a 5-year license to actually be in the classroom. And that was a great controversy. It's something that I do not believe in. I believe in different pathways to become a teacher, but not without some experience in the classroom, actually having some hands-on experience before getting into the classroom. And so that was of controversy. I actually believe the what was passed is not in compliance with Indiana code, because the teacher evaluation system that's in process states that teachers will be on a probationary contract for the first 2 years. So I don't believe that, you know, the state of Indiana really can give a 5-year license to a teacher right away, that they have to actually be on a probationary status. So I'm a National Board Certified Teacher. I'm certified with the highest standards in the nation, and I really truly believe that we need to have highly qualified teachers in our classroom teaching our students. And then we also need to be recruiting teachers, and I will say teachers specifically of color, making sure that we're actually offering our own programs to get kids excited about the field of education, even at the high school level.
Is it? I appreciate the call, Ms. B. Is it also the people that push to say, you know, anybody can walk in and be a teacher if you've got, you know, the professional standards? Is it that they're thinking that teaching in an elementary school, a middle school, or a high school is like being an adjunct professor at a university, where if you've got the skills and the knowledge, you can walk into a college classroom and teach? Senator Lugar can walk into the classroom down at the University of Indianapolis and teach a lecture. I'm not, it is, and we know he's a brilliant man and does great things. Can he really go in a middle school classroom and teach American government? Because there is that knowledge of understanding how to work with young people today. That's a skill that you just, even if you know it, if you learn it in class, until you're right in that classroom, that's like Andrew Luck can learn the game plan, but he's got to be in the game and make the mistakes and learn.
Yes, I totally agree. You got to have some pedagogy, which means that you have to know a little bit about how to teach, mm-hmm. not just the content matter. So actually, we're going to be working with the licensing. That's one of the things that I feel needs to be a priority, to make sure that we're going to have high-quality, rigorous licensing procedures for our teachers in the state of Indiana. But then we also need to be sure we're recruiting quality people to go into the field of education.
239-1310, 239-1310 is Afternoon's Name. Let me go back to the phones. And Nia, hi there.
Hi, Amos. How are you?
Fine.
And Superintendent Linda, congratulations.
Thank you, Nia.
I have two questions. One question is, who is in charge of redistricting the schools? And another question that I have is, who else is in charge that can see to about issues with Pike Township with their superintendent? Base superintendent, he's not doing a good job, and all these issues that's going on, if he can't handle them, then he needs to be replaced.
Well,
because Pike has more than one issue with special needs, and it's not right.
Well, and I said already that I am a special education teacher, so the special needs concerns will be addressed as part of the school culture process with our regional coordinators. And so we really need to make sure that we're doing what we need to be doing in the field of special education. Also, the I think you had two questions.
You were talking about redistricting boundaries for individual schools.
Yeah, I'm not in charge of that. That does happen at the local level. The state of Indiana really doesn't have a role in the redistricting of the school districts.
And Nia, that's what you voted on November the 6th on the back part of the ballot for school board members in Pike Township. And if you've got concerns about how the school district is being run, you need to go to the school board meetings and find out from the Pike School Board office what meeting can members of the public talk for a minute or 2 minutes and go and say your piece.
Okay, because I know there's one tonight at Central Elementary School, but it doesn't say if it's open to the public or not.
Oh, hold it. Any school board meeting in the state of Indiana is open to the public. Period.
Okay.
End of statement. And that includes charter school boards.
Okay, because, Amos, you know, my son James, we're still having issues. He's up here at Imagine West, and they're having issues here. And I'm just trying to get him somewhere where I can get him help, and nobody's trying to help me with him. So,
how's he now? He's at Imagine West now?
Yes, and he's not getting the help that he needs.
At Imagine West?
Yes.
I'm trying.
He has a team of people, but the thing about it is that they're only giving him 5 to 10 minute breaks, and he has a 90-minute IEP, and they're not going by that.
Then what you need to do, since everything is going into the Christmas holiday,
mm-hmm.
wait till the first of the year,
okay,
and then get a hold of the Department of Education and file a grievance or complaint with the Special Education Office of the Department of Education because it's under new management.
Okay.
And the other thing that you can do is that you have the, as the parent, you can reconvene the case conference and talk about what it is that you feel is not being taken care of. And then they have to reconvene the case conference to address your issues.
Okay.
And you can do that. And when the last time you had a case conference, did Pike drive it or IPS?
IPS did it. They messed it up. And then they sent it over here to Imagine West.
No, IPS. And you, but you live in the IPS district, correct?
Yes.
IPS drives that. I want you to clearly understand, because you live in the IPS school district, even though you're at a charter school, IPS drives the IEP. And if IPS is not doing its job, you complain to the head of special education for IPS, and then after the first part of January, there's a new superintendent in town at the state level. You got it?
Yes, sir.
All right. Appreciate that. Thank you. 239-1310. 239-1310 is Athens News. Name is back to the phones and Reverend Ajabu. Hi there.
Hey, Amos. How you doing?
I'm fine.
Good. And congratulations to Miss Glenda Ritz.
Thank you.
I haven't met you personally, but I am really, really liking the things that I'm hearing you say and the things that are being said about you.
Great.
I look forward to meeting you down through the picture there. But I'm calling about a situation that has an educational component along with the social justice background.
Well, now let's keep it to what the superintendent of public instruction does, because a lot of people want to talk to her today.
Yeah, and I don't know whether she can help out in this regard or not, but let me just bounce it off of her and see.
All right.
There's an issue where out on the south side, some kids were arrested and got out.
No. Yeah, on the situation with the South Side, that does not involve a school. It's got to involve a school to engage the superintendent of public instruction. All right, let me move on to Delana. Hi there.
Hi, Amos. Hello, hi. Glenda. This is Delana from Parent Power.
Hi.
And hi. We right now, our focus, I mean, not, it says, we say parent power, but we also understand these parents are here for their student. And one thing that I have not heard enough of is not only parental, which, you know, we talk about choice, but parent, you know, parent voice in the state house, but also student voice. I was wondering if there was anything in your administration that's talking about student evaluations. Students in college have to give an evaluation of every single teacher that they deal with, and the school deals with it accordingly. And that teacher or that professor accordingly. And I'm thinking, you know, we really need to start listening to student voice. We talk about, you know, reform and everything else. You know, people had conversations with students. It was very led, and there was an agenda being pushed. We have to really start thinking democratically. If we're sending to students into schools, they know who the best teachers are. They know who, and it's not the ones that they just like, but they know about the ones that really care about them and their education. We have to start implementing evaluations of every school. When I work at a high school after school program, and when every session that I have with students, you know, in a group, I ask them to evaluate it so I can make myself better and I know how to connect with them better. And I feel like your administration really needs to be thinking this. I mean, this is 2012, and we're still doing, you know, we're still talking about students like they don't have a brain, like they are, you know, completely empty and don't know anything. And they do know, and they have been assessing their whole lives how to deal and be in the system that we really need to change. So I guess that's my comment. Right. But what do you think about it is the question.
All right, let me let the superintendent respond.
Actually, student voice is very important. And when my regional coordinators, I keep going back to that, when we get in place and actually assess the cultures of schools, student voice is going to be very important in that process. So actually, I look forward to that. that. I think students have a lot to offer, and especially as we move forward with career and tech opportunities, you know, we need to hear the student voice and see what their views are on what they need to be able to leave the schools with to be successful when they leave. So yes, student voice is very important. It's important, actually. You were speaking about teachers personally making sure they get feedback from their students regarding instruction. And I think there are a great many individual teachers who do that, and I will be supporting that to happen in the classroom. But beyond that, I want to get student voice input regarding the cultures of their school so that we can really address the issues that we need to address.
239-1310, 239-1310, Staff News Name. I got an email at praiseindy.com, and then something just popped into my email box. There was a column in the Indianapolis Star by the itinerant guy that writes columns everywhere and would love to have this radio show, but he's not going to get it, that criticized you for being naive, not understanding politics, just way above your head. And then the Indianapolis Chamber of Commerce just issued their legislative agenda, and they're showing that they're the Chamber of Commerce not for the city, but for the suburbs, because they come right out and say that they support the appointment of the superintendent of public instruction by the governor. It's the first time I've ever seen the Indianapolis Chamber of Commerce publicly diss an elected official before they even take the public oath. What do you feel about all these people that are demonizing you the way Republicans have demonized our president?
Well, I guess I'll actually first of all say that I am not naive. I am very knowledgeable about my subject matter and what I'm one to do with education, and I think that I'm gaining the respect of the people that I speak with regarding my expertise in education. Actually, with the appointment versus election, I think the people clearly spoke on that issue this year, that they want to continue to see it to be an elected position. Education is too vital and too important to have it appointed for political reasons. And many states, they either elect their state board of education and appoint their superintendent, or they elect their superintendent and appoint their state board of education. Now, there's a reason for that. It's called balance and keeping it out of the political arena. There are just a couple of states who appoint both, and I can tell you that the political agendas are going on. And our kids are not footballs. You know, they are supposed to be, we're supposed to be interested in the education of our children and not political agendas that have been set forth by either party.
Did anyone from the Indianapolis Chamber either speak with you or speak with your staff before they came out here and just basically slammed you?
Not to my knowledge. I did have an initial interview with the Indianapolis Chamber, I believe, but I don't believe they came out. That was during the campaign,
right?
And I don't believe they came out and endorsed any candidate, the Indianapolis Chamber. No, I've not had any conversation, I'm not going to be bothered by what people might say about me. I am moving ahead with an agenda, and I'll speak with anybody from any party regarding what's right in the classroom.
Back to the phones, and Terry, hi there.
Hi, Amos, and congratulations, Superintendent Ritz.
Thank you, Terry.
I am so glad that the state of Indiana is not totally backward in the way it elects people, so I wish you well for many years.
Thank you.
You're welcome. What Robert said and what Brenda said earlier about looking into things and involving kids in the Pike area and certainly other places, I hope that that happens. And I want to ask you about something innovative. What about your administration having some of its personnel communicate with people from all of the counties electronically, by phone, writing, whatever it would take, so that you get response statewide and you know up to the day or up to the week what's going on in school systems?
Well, I think actually you're going to see those things start to take place. We're going to have a great PR talking about what's happening in the public schools in Indiana. You're going to see some communication that really is going to be very far-reaching. You're also going to see some opportunities for input of things that might be coming down for policy, and we're also going to be doing social media. We're going to have a network that will connect with the DOE and with the schools and the parents. So you are actually going to be very informed. I also have talked with legislators and a few legislators, and I mentioned that I was going to be putting out a regular newsletter to legislators, keeping them informed about policies that are enacted as a result of law of which they have passed. And they were surprised that I was going to be doing that kind of open right. communication.
Thank you very much. Uh-huh. And to your detractors, I hope that they go and get some more education themselves, maybe wash their mouths out with soap. And to you and all the other women elected and appointed officials, you go, ladies.
I appreciate it. 239-1310. We got an email at praiseindia.com. If a juvenile breaks the law and are incarcerated in the juvenile center, they go to school. I mean, there's a school in the juvenile center, or if you're in a county juvenile facility, there's school. The person had a question. If someone is been arrested, awaiting trial for a crime, and they're under house arrest, how do they get educated if they won't let you out of house arrest to go to school? Or is the law such that if you're awaiting trial for a crime and you're under house arrest, your house arrest can be modified for you to go to school just like your house arrest can modify you to go to work?
Well, I'd have to actually look into that actual right. situation. But I do believe in many cases that the school district, and it depends on if the child might be special needs. Right. I'm not sure what the case is, mm-hmm. But there is schooling even provided at the home level. Mm-hmm. Because I know that teachers are asked if they want to go and actually provide that education at the home level. But I'm not quite sure if it's generalized to just students that have been arrested.
Okay.
So I'll have to actually look and see what is in the regulations regarding that, because I don't think the intent is to deny children an education. Mm-hmm. So I actually have to look into that, okay. because you're right. We do provide education actually within the prison system and the juvenile system.
239-1310. 239-1310's afternoon's name is. We'll be back with our remaining moments with the superintendent of public instructions. She already took an oath, so I don't have to say elect anymore.
I don't take office to the 14th.
Yeah, but she took the oath in front of kids at the school. That's a good thing. It's afternoon's name is after these. We're with Glenda Ritz. Quickly, what is this Common Core thing? Common Core curriculum.
Oh yeah, that is something that everybody needs to know about. Common Core is a curriculum in language arts and math that is college career ready, mm-hmm. and it was developed among consortium of states, and it is approved in some form amongst 46 states. But let me expand upon what that means. Mm-hmm. First of all, we have some states who are doing their own standards and their own assessments. Then we have some states who have adopted the language arts and not the math. Some who have adopted the language arts Common Core, the math and not the language arts. And then we have some states who have adopted Common Core and 15% more standards added on to it and still considered Common Core. And then we have other states who've got a big mix between their own standards and their Common Core, and some have actually made parallel standards for themselves. In the state of Indiana, unfortunately, back there a couple of years back, we never got the opportunity to really have a dialogue in the state of Indiana about what standards we really do want. Mm-hmm. And the Common Core was adopted with very little input. There was a process, and they did hold a hearing, and it was passed by the State Board of Education. It was approved. Suggested and recommended by the roundtable, mm-hmm. at the state level to be approved. Since then, we've started to slowly implement those standards, and now there's lots of questions, especially among parents, especially in the area of math, whereby the Common Core standards have an entire different methodology of instruction and a lot of verbal written pieces that go along with the math instruction that is new and different. And so during my campaign, I was elected by Democrats, Republicans, Tea Parties, everybody across the board, and there was a common concern with Common Core. So actually what we're tied into with Common Core in the state of Indiana is PARCC assessments, PARCC, and we are a part of a consortium of 23 states that are doing more pass-fail tests. So instead of one ISTEP test in 2014-15, we are headed for having four pass-fail test.
Can that be modified? Because when this came before the roundtable, I raised the question saying, well, does this mean we're going to have harder I-step? And they had to reluctantly say, yeah. And I'm going, when are you going to warn people this train is coming down the track?
Well, that's and I personally am wanting to not have the contract with park assessments for several reasons. Number one, they're more pass-fail tests, and I do not believe pass-fail tests give us the information that we need. We need growth model tests. Second point is we will have no control over the cost of the test. They're developing them. They're going to talk to us about here's the cost that will be for each state per student. We will not really have too much say once the cutoff scores are set amongst the consortium. You know, Indiana doesn't have its own say on the cutoff scores. So I'm wanting Indiana to not be part of PARC, and that's going to require an open dialogue about Common Core. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping through the legislative process that we actually get to have that dialogue and look and see what Indiana wants to do with our standards. It might be a mix, you know, could come out in all kinds of ways, but then actually have our own growth model assessments to go along with that.
Final question. You're in the transition. If people want to get a hold of you before you formally move into the Department of Education down town, how do people get a hold of y'all?
Well, they can actually apply for a position, they can go to idoejobs.com.
idoejobs.com.
Yes, and if they want to contact me, I guess, prior to that, yeah, the email address is info at RITS4ED, and that's the number 4.
RITS number 4, and then ed.com.
Yes.
So if you want to get a hold of her, because you don't have a phone, because she's ripping and running and trying to transition, info at RITZ, the number 4ED.com. If you want a gig, IDOEjobs.com. She is the superintendent of public instruction, Glenda Ritz. Merry Christmas. Happy Kwanzaa. Happy New Year. And we look forward to working with you and having you on the program in 2013. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Amos. I look forward to
tomorrow. We'll tell you the good news of Warren Township Schools getting $29 million. In Race to the Top, the only school district in Indiana to get this money for 4 years. We don't know what they're going to be doing with it, but it's got to be serious if it's Race to the Top funds. Only school district in the Midwest to do that. We'll find out what Warren is doing, plus talk to Congressman Andre Carson about that. All that and more on the program tomorrow. I'm Amos Brown. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow live at 1.